everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And lucky us, stop by today, Dr. Kent Robershaw. And a good time for it, too. Kent, welcome back to WBAI.
Always a pleasure to be back here.
You know, Ken, good time, because I've just been rethinking depression. And part of it has to do with, you know, some reading we were doing by Andrews and Thompson. And I wanted to ask you about depression and its evolutionary roots. Let's look at depression a different way, because we're always looking at what causes depression. What about depression and its evolution?
Well, it seems that the fact that depression is so common amongst human beings, you know, something like 30 to 50% of people report depression at some point in their life, that it seems like it's almost normal, and it's a part of the human existence. And like every other aspect of human behavior, human function, or most things, you would think that the human brain has evolved so that there's something positive that comes with depression, meaning that there must be something that is evolutionarily adaptive about the state of mind of depression, that it's, again, not necessarily something abnormal, something you should rush to treat, but there may be some positive aspects of the fact that human beings are capable of and experience bouts of depression.
Like what?
Well,
give me an evolutionary positive.
Well, I think that the idea that depression is coming about is sometimes analogous to people talking about a fever when there's an infection or something, that it's to highlight the person that there's something going on that needs to be experienced and worked through. Something that's going on that, just like a fever, isn't something abnormal. It's actually a response that triggers from the body that suggests that something's going on that needs attention. In the same way, depression may be the way the mind deals with things as they come along, whether we understand what they are or not, that shows we need to sit down and perhaps think about what it is that we're depressed about.
Well, now there's where I run into trouble. Because I don't know if a fever tells you something is wrong. I think what a fever tells you something is wrong and we're taking care of it. And if you had a fever and you didn't say, what's causing my fever, which it wouldn't matter if you were in the backwoods, you just say, I think I'll lay down till I get over it, which many people would do. So nothing about depression is telling you you should sit down and think about it. It's just the depression just exists. Now, maybe we have to define what depression is. Maybe we have to say that it's a broad, broad category. What is, could you give me, Kent Robershaw, the psychiatrist, what's a clinical description of what is depression? So, I mean, we want to talk about it from clinically. Where would you put the rubber stamp on depressed?
Depressed, clinically, would be a set or cluster of symptoms that tend to go together that are typical of a depressed state. And they would include, for example, number one symptom would be a decreased interest in the things that normally give you pleasure around you, a decreased interest in wanting to do these things, and perhaps a decreased enjoyment when doing these things. So that would be, for example, one aspect that goes on with depression. Second would be sleeping difficulties, problem sleeping, either sleeping too much or sleeping too little would be another clinical symptom that would suggest someone is in a depressed state. Thirdly, there would be a change in appetite. Again, the person not wanting to eat, not enjoying food, sort of related to the decreased interest, or the opposite. There's a change in appetite where the person wants to eat all the time. obviously one of the key symptoms of depression would be that feeling state, that emotional state of sad and tearful and blue and, you know, close to tears at times. That would be one aspect that would give someone.
Well, but how would that be different than sad?
Sad and depressed? Well, I think that, you know, again, sadness and close to tears would be certainly one of the seven or eight core symptoms of depression. So I would think that...
As a symptom, but you could be sad without being depressed.
That's right. You can be sad appropriately because something very bad just happened. Like,
or you lost something. Yeah. You had suffered a loss.
Yeah, so mourning would be a person would be very sad and blue, but that wouldn't be depression. It would just be an appropriate response to the loss of some person or something that was important.
You know, I think since Kent, we tend to drop the description a little too easily on people, I would say that depression is something that interferes with your ability to do your job or to love your mate. Mm-hmm. I mean, just real simple. Real simple. Something that gets in the way of your relationship, or something that gets in the way of your work.
Right. And as you, the first question you asked about, again, what could possibly be the evolutionary sort of function of depression? Well, it is thought that, again, maybe withdrawing from work stresses and relationship stresses or social stresses is actually adaptive. Maybe the mind is already sort of caught up with a cluster of depressed and unhappy emotions and thoughts, and that withdrawing, for example, isolating, which can be a symptom of depression, is in fact an adaptive way to not add further stress and further conflict to the person. So again, that would be an example how depression would be evolutionarily a good thing to do.
Here's the problem. The problem is, if you're somebody who is obsessional, now that means somebody who tends to think too much and keep thinking in circles, and you get depressed, they tell you, think about why you're depressed. Well, if you're obsessional, it's the worst thing in the world you could do, because what you're going to do is think about it and think about it and think about it and think about it, and you're going to find a subject. I'm depressed because I lost my job. I'm depressed because my boyfriend cheated on me. I'm depressed because I'm getting too old. I'm depressed because... But once you get that, I'm depressed because... People very often will just go into, I'm depressed because I have to go into New York to work and I hate New York. I'm depressed because of the sameness of things. I'm depressed because I can't stand doing the same job over and over again. All of these make-believe things are make-believe things. You make them up in your mind. Because if you believe them, then what happens is you now, every time you think them, you get more depressed. So it's almost like depression has a life of its own, and it sends you out to fish for why you're depressed. I'm depressed because of my relationship with my mate. As a result of it, you stay away from your mate, and you get more depressed. So I think depression is a very funny kind of cute little thing. I think depression is one of these things that we feel, and then we make up reasons why we feel it sometimes. And other times we feel it for a reason. And other times we feel it because it's chemical. And other times we feel it because who knows why.
Yeah, I mean, the causes of depression, for example, are very unclear. I mean, as you're saying, sometimes it feels like depression seems to be reactive to some event that occurred, some stress, something, childbirth or a death or job loss, or in these economic times, you know, something causes it. Or depression can be a result of illness.
But does depression cause it? Let's say job loss. Or let's go better than that, end of a relationship. A woman says, I'm going to have a relationship, and the beauty of this relationship is it's going to take me away from myself, you know? Mm-hmm. Hold on a second. That's some music coming out of nowhere.
So that depression, again, can have the feeling like you know or think you know why you're depressed. And as opposed to, again, maybe it's more unclear that what you're focusing in as the cause is not necessarily the cause. You're just having a period where you're having depressive thoughts, and the trying to figure out why is not necessarily going to lead to the solution.
Sure, because we know, for example, if you get low serotonin, it generally goes along with depression. We know this kind of goes there. But then what happens when you have low serotonin, which means it could be during a menstrual cycle or it could be during any number of things. What happens when you have low? You ruminate. Now, what do you ruminate about? You ruminate about bad things. You ruminate about things. You look around you and you say, oh, I feel so bad. It must be because of you. It's my boyfriend. He doesn't do enough. He's not what I think he is. Oh, it's because of the subways. Oh, it's because of whatever. And what happens is what may be start off as a chemical reaction, a simple physiological reaction, becomes an obsessional trait that further depresses you. I don't know. I mean, I'm a shrink, and what happens to me for a living is people come to me and they ask me why they're depressed. I generally can find a reason why they're depressed, but I'm going to go back to the example. If a person has a boyfriend and they break up with their boyfriend and they get depressed, they say, because of my boyfriend. But the question I have is, were you depressed before this? And they say, yes, I was depressed before my boyfriend. So then I said, so let's say this. Let's say you live in a state of depression, and you found a boyfriend that lifted you out of your state of depression for a short time, and now you're back to who you were. It's not because you lost your boyfriend, but because you've always had this depressive mind. And most people I know who suffer depression have suffered it most of their lives. So whatever it is you're creating in the present that said this is the cause of it, I never got my PhD, I never went to school, it's all hogwash, because it was always there. It was there when you were a kid too. So what we have to be careful of is the reasons. And what we have to be careful for as professional is providing the reasons. Because one of the nice things about being a therapist is like being a palm reader, like being an astrologist. You tell people that there are causes for the way they feel. And people want to pay you for that because they're confused. What would happen if we took most people who are depressed and said, we'll never know the cause. Let's see what we explore from here.
Yeah, right, that you may have to just sit through this, that this is what the human mind has evolved to sort of sit in these emotions, explore these emotions, maybe write them down, maybe talk to them about them, but not necessarily try to figure out why and what's the root cause of it, but just sort of sit in the feelings, and with the idea that exploring it, talking about it, writing about these emotions, in and of itself and or time, the depression may lift.
Especially around this time of year. You know, there are a lot of people who are depressed around Christmas.
Sure.
January 2nd, they're going to feel better. You know? I mean, and they know it. Many people know, oh, I'll feel better January 2nd. They're going to feel better right after New Year's Eve, as soon as they find out that they weren't invited to the parties or whatever it is. They're going to feel better when the parties are over. I know one person who says, on every holiday, I wake up and I start drinking. I drink from beginning to end. She said, because I don't want to even think about how alone I am during these times of year. Okay. I'd rather she didn't have to do it that way, but that's the way she does it. So depression itself may not only be maybe one of two things. And according to some theorists, depression is an opportunity to think. It's an opportunity to ruminate. It's an opportunity to fix your life because you're home, you're alone, there's nobody else around, and you could fix yourself. That's one. You could think about your problems. You could focus on it. But if you're somebody who tends to be obsessional, thinking about it doesn't get you anywhere. Now, one of the things that happen to people who are depressed is they are depressed and they feel depressed and they start thinking about it, and then eventually the depression lifts, and they believe that it was their thinking that made the depression lift. But it's not. It's like the depression just lifted. It was time. Other people can come to you and want medication. Now, that's part of what you do. Part of what you do is prescribe medication to people who are depressed.
Right.
And I know I've spoken to quite a few people who have come to you who have come back and said he didn't want to give me medication. He said he would rather I sit through this for a while, and then if that doesn't work, he's going to come back to me. You know, tell me, what's the criteria? When do you see that it is important to give a person a medication?
Well, I think to underscore the first point, which is, again, the idea of this show, which is that there's something adaptive and something actually positive about the negative mind of depression. And again, if it wasn't an adaptive sort of response, why would human beings have it, like every other evolutionary
trait? Yeah, why would we be allowed to be depressed?
Right.
And why would so many people have it if nature didn't mean us to have it for some reason?
Right.
Like, why would there be typhoons, you know, if it didn't do us some good?
Yeah, so I think, given the idea that there may be some adaptive aspect of the mind becoming depressed, then medication clearly, you know, whether it's the good medication from Dr. Robertshaw, like Prozac and Ativan, or the bad chemicals of, you know, Krispy Kreme donuts and cocaine and alcohol, they're all sort of distractions or magical ways to lift yourself from this depressed state, that, again, there may be something about human nature and the human mind that wants to pause and sort of then fixate, think about what it is possibly that's causing it. And as Armand said, for people who tend to have a lifelong history of being obsessional and overthink and overanalyze everything, then this may not be the answer for them. They need to perhaps do it less, though for some people this does become the pause where, again, the symptoms of depression, like decreased interest in television and music and decreased wish to go out with friends, may be a way for you to pull inward and to sort of think, like, okay, what hurts? What hurts in my life, my social life, my work life, and try to come either with some kind of solution to it, or perhaps just some level of quote-unquote working through, just dealing with the complicated emotions about the complicated social and work experiences we have, and something about that being cathartic, something about...
If it is, or if it's just a time you're passing and you're finding a way to pass your time by thinking about that stuff.
Right.
You see what I mean? I mean, it may be cathartic. It may be. It sounds like you hit a eureka. But maybe the depression is meant to be there for a while. As I know with, for example, and I hate to keep going to it, but you go to the menstrual cycle, there's a certain number of days the depression is meant to be there. Of course it's going to serve a person. It's going to depress you. It's going to stop you from being active. It's going to keep people away. It's going to serve its purpose. On one hand. On the other hand, all during that time, everything you think is, people say, oh, what you're thinking is real, even though you are being premenstrual. And I'm saying, no. What you're thinking is anything that will keep you depressed. See? And that's the idea. That's what you think about. You depress yourself because you want to be depressed at that moment. There are people who are depressed who need help immediately. Then there are other people who are depressed and it's part of a transition, part of a phase they're going through, part of a thing they need to do. And perhaps during that time, you just give yourself permission to not think about it, not focus on it, not figure it out. And just have the time with yourself. Have some company with yourself.
Yeah, and just allow yourself and acknowledge the reality that you're feeling depressed. I think, again, getting back to the holidays, that if you're somebody who during the holiday time, traditionally or this year, is depressed, there's something that's very real about just acknowledging that I'm not having that Christmas spirit, not to sort of feel shame about it, and certainly not to sort of act like a clown or comedian or just, you know, pull myself out of it, but just acknowledge it and feel what you're feeling as okay. You know, that's the way my mind is right at this moment, and it's fine. But as Armand's saying, there's a thing about feelings are not facts, right? You can have feelings about things, but just because you feel something, it doesn't make it a fact. And certainly during the course of depression, a lot of your feelings about my job and where I live and my family and people around me certainly get distorted in a very negative light, and they're not factual. It's just during this depressive jag, things get colored in a very negative way, usually the outside world, as well as, you know, sometimes the person in the mirror, in terms of thinking about all my faults, all my shortcomings, all the things I've done wrong, and obsessing about the past and how I've done things to feel shame and guilt.
You know, also, my friends, there is a chant. It's a test I've learned a long time ago. You know, when you're really depressed, you get weepy. And you hang around your house and you feel weepy and weepy and weepy. But what I've noticed about the people who are depressed, who have obsessional thinking, blaming something for their depression, like blaming the subways or blaming New York or blaming your job or blaming your mother or blaming, they don't cry. They don't cry. They don't really cry. They weep a little bit, and they don't cry. One of the things that happen when I see people who are depressed, I evoke crying. And I evoke it through some tricks that I have. And using the tricks I have, I evoke the crying, and they immediately feel the depression lift. Now, is that cathartic? Is it endorphic? Whatever it is that goes on. But the truth of it is, for yourself, if you're depressed and you're thinking you know the reason, see what happens after you cry. And I don't mean wistful, light tears. I mean real paroxysm of tears. Get as far into it as he can. Cry as hard as he can. And then see what happens when you lift your head after that. Because generally that's all that depression is doing. It's stopping you from that vulnerability. It's stopping you from crying. Depress, the very word is to push down, to depress. What are you keeping down? Is it pain you're keeping down? Let yourself feel that pain, and let's see what happens after that. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shore. The two of us, we're in the depression business. You know, that's what we do. You know, like dry cleaners, they press, we depress. We're there. And we treat it all the time. There are times when you see suicide. There are times you see real despair. And there are times that you've got to do something about it immediately. There are times that a person is so depressed they can't go to work. Times that they can't show up for their relationship. And somebody is asking, please do something immediately. And then there are other times when it's just something that sweeps over you, and you're living with it, and you're feeling it, and you've got to go through it. And you go through it by not believing the words that your mind fetches. It's hard to just keep going. And we're going to take your calls about this a little later. Our telephone number is 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. Kent, in depression, when people are feeling, you know, when people have different options, they could do exercise is a great option, right?
Right.
Exercise is a chemical adjustment of your body. It's like taking drugs.
Right.
Right?
I mean, it's an action that causes endorphins to be released. It increases serotonin, increases norepinephrine, gets adrenaline going. So exercise certainly causes the body and causes the neurotransmitters to all become elevated that gives people a feeling of well-being.
So what we have, or wellbutrin, what we have is we have people who are always going to chemically adjust themselves. So, for example, if you drink coffee when you feel down, chemical adjustment. If you drink green juice, chemical adjustment. If you sleep, chemical adjustment. If you wake, chemical adjustment. We're trying to rebalance ourselves through chemistry. And almost anything you do is chemical. Eating muffins, eating a box of donuts, is a chemical adjustment. So what people's natural state of being is, once they feel vulnerable in this depressed way, their natural thing to do is to adjust it chemically. The people, however, who think and overthink and fixate, which means to keep your mind on one subject over and over again, they don't get to the chemical adjustment. You know, they don't get to it because it's in your mind. So those people very often will ride it and ride it and ride it, and then they will believe that the subject they thought about was true. This is the worst part of it. You know, I hate this house, a person might say. And they hate this house, and they hate this house, and they hate this house, and they say it three or four times. And then their depression lifts. But they hear the words, I hate this house, in their minds, over and over again, because they've been saying it so often. So very often, depression will lead you on a path that may get you to believe that you know a solution. And then, but the solution is not necessarily a solution. So here's a question you ask yourself. Before this thing that caused my depression, was I depressed before that? If you see you have a lifelong history of depression, don't believe that any one thing in the present is causing it. Believe that there's an emotional frailty that you have that maybe you have to work on, but it's not what's causing the depression. The frailty is there from a long time ago. Were you depressed as a kid? Were you depressed as an adolescent? Were you depressed as a young person? Were you depressed as you were growing up? And then you lose your job and you get depressed. Don't say it's because you lost your job. It's because you've always been that way. And maybe it's time to do something about it. Maybe not. It's up to you. I kind of know a few depressed people who are close friends of mine. It's fine. It's fine. It's just the way you are.
Yeah, or people, again, having periods of depression, that seems to be that's the place they need to go to at that moment, and that's fine, that they don't necessarily return calls during that time. They tend to, and that's their process of getting through things or getting through the seasonal changes. Again, I think Armand and I are saying we don't know. No one knows sometimes what the causes of depression are for everybody. Maybe there is a biological sort of up and down that people have, and so it isn't the reasons you blame. It's just that the body and the mind goes through these periods of kind of isolating and focusing on trying to figure out what could be improved, what could be hurting in their life, and then you come out of those periods, you know, of trying to be contemplative as opposed to fixating. Again, fixating has the idea of being stuck in a record, you know, like a skip in a record. It's just going over and over the same sets of facts and dwelling on it as the reason with no cathartic release and no sort of solution. That's not a very adaptive way.
This is Armand Mill with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. We are talking about depression, my friends, because some of you are hit with the mood. You know, depression for a reason. The brain's ability to enter a depressed state has been preserved throughout evolution. It suggests that it is an adaptation. What it does is it does focused rumination about problems. People who are at that state of mind very often can solve some problems. But in some times, for people who tend to think too much, rumination, which means thinking over and over again about a subject, does not necessarily help the depression, but kind of, if anything, just keeps the focus on it over and over again. We're going to take a short break. It is trouble in mind, my friends. When your mind gets in trouble, your mind runs itself, you know? And, of course, it's quite a machine. We'll be back with you in a couple of minutes.
Hi, this is Iggy Pop, and you're listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth.
I took a pounding from the radio today. I heard the radio say it over and over, and there was no escape.
This is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, and this is Iggy Pop.
Trouble in always, for the sun will shine in my back door someday.
Jimmy Witherspoon, Trouble in Mind, Jimmy Witherspoon, one of the lesser-known great, great talents. This is Armand DeMille with Dr. Kent Robert Shaw. We're talking about depression, because some of you out there are depressed. You know, you may have a relative who's depressed, and you say, what's the matter? And they give you a reason, and then that kind of gets you off their back. Well, maybe what would be better is if you have a relative who's depressed, you see somebody who's depressed, you say, sorry if you feel bad, and just give them a hug. Don't try to take it away. Don't try to solve it. Don't give them solutions. Don't say you got to listen to WBAI, you got to call Ken Robert Shaw. You know, sometimes it's better just to let people be what they are and let them find their own solutions. Now, question is becomes, when is a person in trouble? Kent, what are they in trouble? When do they need meds? I mean, they come to you. You determine.
Well, I think, again, as you said before, it comes to a point where it's clear that depression is not serving any adaptive function and that it's gone on either too long or it's gotten to a point where the depression in and of itself is causing more stress and more problems. So it's not just isolating from friends to sort of try to figure out what's going on, but I'm not going to work and I'm going to lose my job. Or certainly when depression gets to the point where people feel hopeless and they're starting to contemplate, you know, suicide or something like that. So certainly when people's depression get to the point where they're not able to function, it's causing them further and further pain. Or, again, depression gets to the point where people feel overwhelmingly hopeless to the point where they're not having the idea that it's a normal process that you work through and you'll come out of, but this is the rest of my life in pain. And then I think that it's an emergency to sort of have people not commit suicide or do something that's irreparable.
212-209-2900. That's our telephone number here. We're going to take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille, 212-209-2900. Let's take a call. Hi, you're on the air. We have the calls up there.
Hello?
Yes, hi there.
Oh, hi. Well, this is Jillian.
Hello, Jillian.
I'm just calling. I just wanted to just give my own personal thoughts on depression, because I guess I've been depressed most of my life. And I find it lifts when I apply my intellect, because sometimes the thoughts are unreasonable. And I'm able to, like, rationalize my way through it. I don't know if that's good or bad, but...
Well, tell me how you do it. Tell me what you do. You get depressed, and then and then what happens?
Well, then I start to have this negative conversation with myself, where basically I'm putting myself down.
Okay.
And, you know, I'm telling myself all the things I'm not and that I can't do. And then at some point, I guess I just grow tired of that, and I say to myself, well, why not? You know, I look around, and other people who, you know, it's with me, it's a lot based on my financial situation. I'm a single mom and just not being able to do a lot of the things that I wish I could do. And then I am a stubborn person, so it's hard for me to just truly change and say to myself, well, no, this isn't the case. Everything's okay.
So here's the story. Here's what happens.
Yes.
You get depressed, and then you say to yourself, you start talking bad to yourself. Oops, I'm getting some feedback here. Do you have your radio on?
Yes, I turned it off. Sorry.
Okay. So you start feeling... I'm hearing a radio still. Do you still have that radio on?
No, I'm in the car, but no, the radio isn't on.
It's off completely?
Yeah.
All right, because when a person has a radio on, we get that feedback. Now we don't hear it. Good.
Okay.
So what happens is you get depressed and you got this thing beating yourself over the head. Now you're talking bad about yourself. You're saying you're too fat, you don't have enough money, what's the matter with you, you don't have this, you don't have that, you know?
Exactly.
And that perpetuates the depression for as long as the depression wants to be there. Then all of a sudden, after a couple of days, you say to yourself, you know, what are you doing talking to yourself that way? But by the time you say that to yourself, the depression's already lifted. You see... The time of it is there, and you feed it with those thoughts. But by the time you get to being reasonable with yourself, the depression's already lifting.
Huh. So I guess I'll live a life of coming and going, and like you said earlier, you just have to manage and live through it.
Well, you know, as you say, I think you're doing fine. If you talk yourself out of it and that's part of the process, fine. But it's not believing that it's the talking yourself out of it that really does it. What really does it is it has a mood of its own. It has a time of its own.
Mm.
And you give it a little time, you know, you give it a day or two. It's like meditation. It's like prayer, you know?
Right, right. As I become older, I guess you develop that wisdom, and I see that. I see that, so I'm more patient with myself. And
sure.
In
the old days, you would have beaten yourself up, or you would have changed your job.
Exactly.
What's your name?
This is Jillian.
Jillian, I want to thank you very much for calling in.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Sure, and happy holidays to you. This is Armand DeMille. Mm-hmm. 212-209-2900. See, Kent, there she described exactly the same process. So you talk bad to yourself, you talk bad to yourself, you talk bad to yourself. And then suddenly you say to yourself, why am I talking bad to myself? By the time you say, why am I talking bad to myself, your depression's already lifted. There's a funny thing about therapy that I've noticed, and in training my therapists, I very often tell them, by the time the patient gets to you, they're already on the mend. Because they wouldn't have gotten to you if they weren't in the process of mending. And what I tell the therapist is, don't mess it up, you know. Don't kill it at this moment, because they're already getting better. 212-209-2900, let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille.
Hello.
Hello there.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good.
I'm calling because I think sometime around the age of 16, I started feeling this depression. And I just it seems like it's been a weight ever since. And I remember I had just finished college, and was doing, you know, fairly well, looking for a job in my parents' house, no real bills or anything, and I got such a panic attack. It was so unbelievable. It lasted maybe, I felt 100 years, but maybe, I don't know, 10 seconds. And pretty much from then, I never really received one or got one again till maybe the last couple of years, and that was more related to, I just think, being coming of age, having a house, payments, not necessarily a great relationship at the time with my husband. And, you know, it's like I'm sick of being depressed. I've lived this life. I mean, I'm just sick of it.
Well, let me ask you something. What's your name?
Leah.
Leah. Hey, Leah, if your depressed self, if depressed Leah had a name, right?
Mm-hmm.
What can we call her? Let's give her a name. Not a bad name, just a name.
Oh, Daphne.
Daphne. Okay, it's a perfect name. Because, you know, sometimes you're Daphne in the head,
mm-hmm.
right? In the belfry.
Yeah.
But Daphne, good, good, good. What if every time you got that way, you said, hello, Daphne?
Mm-hmm.
And you greeted her and said, I see you've come here. Do me a favor. Don't talk too much, Daphne, because you're going to do a lot of damage. Sit down, have some soup. Hang out with me as long as you got to be here. And when you're ready to go, you go. Embrace her. Rather than reject her, because the fight with the depression itself can be so costly, you begin to hate yourself after a while.
And that's something else I picked up on. You know, it's like, where is this? I don't feel I'm deserving of things. You know, little things to big things.
No, that's what Daphne tells you, because she wants you to stay home with her. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Daphne just wants to meet you. Here she comes. We all have a depressed self. We all have it. I was talking to Kent before. Kent, come back on. You had a baby.
I did have a baby.
You know, and during that first few months of that depression, of that babydom, what happened?
Well, you know, it's you're up all night long, and the baby's crying, and as a first parent, I'm feeling that I don't know what I'm doing. I'm feeling overwhelmed. I'm feeling frustrated and impotent. Unable to stop my son Gavin from crying, and it's a lot of sleep deprivation and a lot of feeling like I'm overwhelmed with something that I'm not sure I'm good at.
So what'd you do?
Well, day in, day out, just sat with it. Didn't try to fix it. Didn't try to run away from it. Just, you know, this is the way I'm feeling. This is, you know, the admixtures of joy with the feeling of sleep deprivation and feeling this is very hard to be with a baby you can't console. And, you know, 3 months into it, it's a joy and has been ever since.
So that guy lifted, the guy who was depressed, right?
He went.
He went away. And he's been around once in a while in your life, right? Once in a while he's been around.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
If he had a name, would you give him a name?
Kenny.
Kenny, okay.
That's
cute. Well, it's all right.
But I think you're saying that again, that...
Well, no, because I have my own experience with it. I used to call him Tony. I would visit Tony, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Daphne and Tony and Kenny would kind of, you know, they'd come in and they'd say, hey, it's raining out, can I sit here? Right? And we would just sit with us, and they want us to stay with them for a little while.
Well, and you're talking about the idea that people feel depressed and shame that they get depressed.
Right.
I mean, they get down on themselves that there's something wrong with them. They're, again, depressed because I'm depressed,
right,
as opposed to just feeling 50% of the people statistically experience it, and it's okay.
I have a visitor. Well, you know, which is kind of funny, because women, when they have their menstrual cycle, very often say, I have a visitor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the visitor could also be like Daphne. You know, could be.
I wish Daphne would give me a break. That's all I
can. Well,
yeah.
Okay, well, now here's the deal. What break are you willing to give Daphne?
As much room as she needs.
Okay, and stop hating her.
Okay, definitely. I'll try and embrace her and have her sit down and relax.
How about a little soup? I think all the Daphne's like a little soup. How about a little soup, Daphne?
Definitely.
Okay.
Thank you.
Hey, best of holidays to you.
You too.
Armando Miller here with you with the positive mind. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
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 Yes.
Yeah, I'm on Monroe from Harlem.
Hello, Monroe.
How are you doing? Listen, yesterday you had a caller, and he had problems with his girlfriend, and he was depressed a bit. And I thought of the visiting nurse service that he should apply to for help because his woman friend might be no longer as available as before. What do you think? Good. All right. Now, the next thing, you have a promo where you say that if you do the same thing time and again and it's not working, maybe you should try something else. But I'm reminded of fishing or of the movie called The Shawshank Redemption, which many have seen, I'm sure, where Tim Robbins is cutting away, chiseling away at a cinder block, and he finally makes a hole big enough to escape. Well, as he kept taking the grit out in his socks and dumping it in the yard, he was doing the same thing day after day, but eventually the thing got large enough, the hole got large enough for him to escape. So the point is that sometimes you have to balance off repeated actions which you feel right about doing with something that is self-defeating. Now, as far as...
Wait, thank you. Monroe, hold it. Hold it right there.
Yeah.
I want to get to that comment, and thank you very much. Michael, take it. Thank you very much for that concept, because he's right. Monroe is right as well. Sometimes you got to repeat the pattern if you believe the pattern is working in your favor. You know, sometimes it doesn't. It's not always getting rid of it. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello. 212-209-2900. Okay, so it's 212-209-2900. So Monroe makes a very good point, Kent. So here we are. We have the following. Depression, the blues. You beat yourself up for being depressed. You beat yourself up all over the place. And I say create the visitor. Think of this as a visitor because you're not beating it, you know? You're at war with it, but it's not going to get it's not going to lose the battle. The way that you could exercise, you could do everything you want, it's there. But I consider you take it with you somewhere. You take it with you as a visitor. You take it with you and you acknowledge it, that the depressed you is part of your being. Let's take another call. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Yes, hi.
Hi.
I'm calling because I suffer from depression.
Mm-hmm.
And today I'm depressed.
Yeah.
And I am so glad that I heard this program because I'm crying because I'm like, somebody understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Somebody understands what? That this mood is so bad?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I get it more so when I'm getting my menstrual.
Yeah.
But sometimes I get my menstrual twice a month.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm depressed more than I am okay. And, you know, I had a lot of things going on in my life at one point that I went to therapy and stuff like that and tried to work things out. And I feel that I've worked certain things out, but I just... can appreciate this topic today because it has helped me to realize that it is okay.
It's more than okay. It's you at this point, you know? Let's say it is chemically based. Let's say that it is a loss of serotonin because you're getting your period on an irregular basis. Let's say it's that. Let's say it's a mood, a visitor. Let's give her a name. What name do you want to give your depression?
Oh boy. Sybil.
Sybil. Okay. Okay, I get it. I get it. Now you know the thing wrong with Sybil is nobody ever welcomes Sybil. Everybody thinks Sybil is evil.
Yes, and that's how I feel like this is what's going on with me. It's a rude trick that's being played on me. It's evil.
Yeah,
that's how I feel.
You know, Sybil is just somebody who's trying to say to you, look, kitty, we got to lay down and we got to go to sleep and we got to get tired and just things aren't so good and I need your help. And so Sybil is kind of dragging you down, dragging you into tears and so on and so forth. And you're trying to fight her day in, day out. And I say the same thing. Imagine Sybil and make Sybil soup. Now, what's your favorite soup, by the way?
My favorite soup is clam chowder.
Clam chowder. Do you make it or do you go out and buy it?
I go out and buy it.
Okay. So now when you're depressed, do you tend to eat clam chowder?
No.
All right. So this is sounds like a very good solution here. Maybe it's time to start getting yourself some clam chowder for Sybil. I say this lightly, and it sounds like I'm talking very lightly about something that's a very serious subject. But I'm very serious about it because I want you to be kind with yourself. Because the worst thing that happens with depression is people beat themselves up. You know?
Yeah, I experienced that. And, you know, I experienced that. More often than I would like to. And this morning I was just talking to my girlfriend. I call it my dark place.
Okay.
So I went into my dark place, but I try not to stay there anymore because I can't continuously live my life on this level because I was a very active person at one time, and I'm a very vibrant person. And what happened was I had gotten Bell palsy like 4 or 5 years ago, and the paralysis is still here, even though my face went back into place. I was dealing with that. And then I almost had a heart attack. And then everything just slowed me down and completely changed my life. And then, you know, stuff going on with family members that is not on a positive note. And work, different things that you mentioned. And then just me having to reaffirm myself, you know, like that. So I'm aware of what's going on with me. It's just that more so when my menstrual cycle is coming is when it really sucks me into a vortex of this dark place for me to deal with.
Yeah, and that's when Sybil's visiting. And so what you call is my dark place. Let's call it my visitor instead. And
okay.
and that's what you deal with, you know? You know, and I know I hear. I don't want to take it non-seriously. I hear your tears. I hear the pain that you live with. I hear it. You know, and I mean, the best I could give and the best everybody can offer is the best you could do is hold somebody. The best you could do is put a hand on them. The best you could do is give them a recognition, but don't give people solutions. What people always do when they see somebody in their dark place, they want to give them answers. Maybe you should this, maybe you should that, you should do this, you should do that, you know, and just... It doesn't hurt. It doesn't help. What really helps is to embrace them. What really helps is to say, I see where you are. I just want you to know I'm here and I'm with you. And to you, I say that. To you,
I thank you for that. I thank God for you.
Of course.
And for one of my girlfriends who always tells me to be kind to myself. You know, and she's the one who recommended me to listen to this program. This is only my second day listening to it. But it's the irony of it is that I got up this morning feeling this way, and then this is what the program is about. So
isn't that amazing?
This has really made my day. You know, so I'm going to take a lot of things into account that, you know, you recommended or your suggestion and your opinion. Like the exercising, I need to exercise anyway, like the exercising and,
By the time you get to exercising, your depression will be gone. By the time you get there, it'll already be gone. So it's fine, and it sounds like you're lifting your head now, but thanks for calling in.
And thank you for listening to me, and
sure.
I appreciate your program.
And what's your girlfriend's name, by the way?
My girlfriend's name is Renee.
Renee, we want to thank you. Renee, thank you very much, and happy holidays to all of you.
Okay, and thank you. Same to you.
Sure. We have to be going, my friends. K tent. I want to thank you very much. We have one more valuable excursion now.
Yes, always a pleasure to be here.
Yeah, we'll be back with you all next week, Tuesday, at 1 p.m. To those of you who celebrate the Christmas holiday, Merry Christmas to you. The rest, happy holidays. Back with you next week. Send me an email if you want, Armand@thepositivemind.com.
And you are tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. We're available online at WBAI.org. Good afternoon. My name is Michael G. Haskins, your radio host and guide. And at 3 p.m., there will be a special. Usually at that hour, you'd be tuning in to Talk Back with Hugh Hamilton, but there will be a Parang special at that time, so tune in for that. Coming up in a moment will be Perspective with Luis Reyes Rivera. That's Luis Reyes Rivera with Perspective. And let's see, tomorrow, check that.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.